Vous êtes sur Art District Radio et c'est l'heure de retrouver Luke Seabright dans Jazz Interview pour une rencontre en anglais avec un artiste de jazz. Passez un très bon moment sur Art District.
Hi everybody, I'm Luke Seabright and you're listening to our jazz interview program on Art District Radio. And today I have on the phone with me Jerry Roach. Jerry heads the Dot Time Legends, which is the branch of Dot Time Records, which restores, remasters and releases previously unheard recordings from some of the great legends of jazz. Dot Time has released albums of music by Ella Fitzgerald, Buck Clayton, Jerry Mulligan, and of course Louis Armstrong, but most recently has just released an album of a live recording by Ben Webster, and I'm gonna have a chance to talk about that with Jerry. Hey Jerry, how's it going?
Hey Luke, great to talk to you.
Yeah, great to, well, it's great to have you on the show again, since this is the second time we've had a chance to speak. Since last time you were on the show, we were talking about the first Armstrong release, which was the Standard Oil Sessions.
Standard Oil Sessions, yeah.
And since then, there's been a second Armstrong release, The Nightclubs. And today, well, recently, I think it was the end of April, Dot Time released this Valentine's Day 1964 live recording of Ben Webster.
Yeah, it's really a great show. I mean, it's a master in his element in front of a very receptive crowd and having a very great band, an actually undocumented band up until this point. And then he, at the end of this year, 64, he was playing at Ronnie Scott's, and then he never came back to America.
Well, indeed, yeah. So I was going to ask you, Ben Webster, obviously one of the great tenor saxophonists, and considered alongside Coleman Hawkins and Lester Young to be one of the great tenor stylists of the early jazz age. So most people will know who Ben Webster is, but could you, as you were already starting to do, sort of situate this in his life, in his career, like, and tell us a little bit the key bullet points about Ben Webster that we need to know?
Well, all you have to do is look at the track listing from this set, and you get the most important and main bullet point, which is, he loved his time that he spent with Duke Ellington. And this comes across in oh so many ways in the track listing. And it's almost a love letter to Ellington in many ways.
Indeed, there's two versions of Caravan, a faster and a slower version. There's also what do we have? There's Chelsea Bridge, which is the Billy Strayhorn track.
Yeah.
And of course Cottontail, which any fan of Ben Webster will know his famous version that he did with Duke Ellington when he was playing with him in the 40s. And he was playing with this is 1964, so this is over 20 years since he left Ellington's band. And yeah, so he's in New York and he's just come back from Los Angeles, right?
Yes, he was taking care of his grandmother, I believe, and his mother, who were both in ill health. And then he came back to New York and he seemed to have some renewed energy, and he was recording fairly frequently, and as a matter of fact, about a month after this, he recorded on Impulse "See You at the Fair," which is a very, very good record.
And that's presumably the last record he recorded in the United States.
I believe so.
So, 1964, he's playing in New York, and a year later, basically...
In New York, he was actually... he sat in on opening night at Basin Street with Ellington. He also was... known to show up at Birdland and play a little piano for Jerry Mulligan as well.
Because Ben Webster did indeed play the piano. In fact, he started his career playing piano in a silent movie theater, if I'm not mistaken.
You are absolutely correct, Luke. You are always on target with your research.
Thanks, Jerry. This is 1964. He's in New York, and as you mentioned, a year later he's gone.
Absolutely. He's in London first, and then he goes to Copenhagen, and as far as I know, he does not return to the States, and he certainly doesn't record in the States anymore.
Yeah, that's right. He's gone. Well, I think he 64. He's 55 years old, and I can't quite remember the year of his death. It might be 73, something like that. So it's the last decade.
Right.
The last decade of his life essentially is spent in Europe, in London, Amsterdam, Copenhagen, where he dies and is buried. So this is really a record of his last few engagements in New York before his departure. It's alive at the Half Note, is that correct?
That's correct. And the band is David Frischberg on piano, Richard Davis, who is absolutely outstanding from beginning to end on bass, and Grady Tate on drums, who is also great. But Dave Frischberg, it could have been one of his first shows, if not the first show, that he played with Webster. On the recording, I left a couple of moments where Webster's kind of working out the tempo, and I Richard Davis had been playing with him for a while, over a year at that point, and Grady Tate had been with him a little while, so my assumption is that he was working the tempo out for Mr. Frischberg.
Yeah, there are even a couple of false starts on the thing. Like, you can tell that they're figuring things out a bit on the fly.
That's right. And to me, I love that kind of stuff. So
yeah.
I try not to put too much of it in, because I think that takes away from just a great listen, but I think it's a nice little peek into a moment in history with one of the greatest saxophone players ever.
Yeah. So Dave Frischberg, you think this might have been the first time playing together, but Richard Davis, they've played together before. Have they recorded together at this point?
I believe so, but I'm not positive, but I would think so.
Okay. But certainly this group of musicians, this is the only time we know that they played together.
That's correct. Or that they were recorded.
Yeah. Cool. So why is it... No, go ahead.
My research tells me that this was probably not a show that was originally scheduled, but he was in town and perhaps somebody canceled or some such thing, and there he was.
And so why are we only hearing this music now?
Well, it's a long story, but it's basically been sitting on a tape for over 50 years, untouched. And as the director of the Legend series, it's my job to try to unearth these things and get them out to people who care about jazz. and to try to do the best I can with the sound, considering it's not been in a controlled temperature vault for 50 years or so.
Of course.
But to try to help the posterity of the great Ben Webster, but also to not interfere with the sound.
Yeah.
I hate people who go in and roll stuff off to make it sound better when you're taking away drums or sax to make it smoother. I don't like that at all.
Yeah. And so where were these tapes hiding?
Oh, I can't tell you.
Confidential information. Fair enough.
We'll be putting more stuff out, so it's a fountain that will be continuing to give over the next few years.
So more Webster material in particular?
No more Webster, but you'll know in a few months. There'll be a couple of announcements, and it will make jazz fans quite happy.
Awesome. That's
of all disciplines.
That's very, very exciting. Thank you. So can you talk to us a bit more about the process then? So like from the moment when you got the tapes to me being able to listen to it on a CD today, where do you come in and your team?
We took the tapes to get them transferred, and then when we transferred them, we then converted them to WAV files, and then with the engineer that I work with, the great Lou Jimenez, we then try to stay out of the way of the performance, but kind of clean up any pops or blemishes that may arise that make it a better listening situation for the consumer. But you know, sometimes we have to leave a couple of warts in because it's impossible for us to get into something without taking out a part of the music.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, because of how these tapes were stored, they weren't in the most pristine of condition. But there, I think you can attest, since you've listened to it, how great it does sound.
It sounds absolutely fantastic. And yeah, I mean, you've got you've also got just the sounds of the audience, and you can hear Ben Webster as well, talking, sort of leading the group. Like there's a real added value from getting the sound of the room and getting that feel of the live experience.
Thank you. It's really a joy to do this kind of work. And for me, I loved couching the set with both different versions of Caravan. I think the first version, he's really, really into it, and he's blowing well. And the Caravan that ends it, the slower version, you could hear just how melodic he is, and the reason why, like on Tenderly and How Long Has This Been Going On, which were also on the recording, why he was such a master of the ballad.
Of the ballad, of course, which he loved to play. That was, and he could get extremely emotional playing them as well, and you can just feel it in the music on this record, like any other Ben Webster record. It's really quite fascinating to listen to.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, what other highlights for you? I'm curious on the album.
For me, like I said, having two different versions of Caravan, which is really one of my favorite Ellington songs, was just a joy. And the fact that he stretches out and one's almost 9 minutes and the other's almost 9.5 is just not even being the producer, just being able to be a jazz fan to listen to both of those versions was just an absolute joy.
Of course.
And of course, his Chelsea Bridge, I've heard it so many times, but I just can't help but loving the emotion that he plays with it, and the fact that he probably played it almost every night.
Yeah.
And by 64, he still loved the song so much that he invested so much emotion into it. It really tugs at your heartstrings.
I asked you the same question when we talked about the Armstrong album quite a few months ago now. Is there anything you feel, when sort of diving into like these unheard Webster material, were there any surprises, anything that you, I mean, anything kind of new and interesting that you sort of saw of Ben Webster?
Yes, the Danny Boy with Grady Tate singing.
Of course, yeah.
That was something that for me was unexpected.
Yeah.
I mean, I had heard a rumor of him enjoying the song Danny Boy, but I was not expecting that tune, nor was I expecting Grady Tate to be singing it. I know of Grady Tate singing, but later on.
Yeah. Because at this stage, Grady Tate is still a relatively young musician. In fact, I think all of the musicians that Ben Webster's playing with here, they're a different generation, basically. They're all a good 25 years younger than him, right?
Absolutely. They're at least 20 years younger. I think Richard Davis was 33. Grady Tate was probably a year or two younger. And then I think David Frischberg was maybe even just a couple of years younger than that. And I will have to say that my old boss at Mosaic Records, Michael Cascuna, was extremely nice to do the liner notes. And the liner notes are absolutely...
They're fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, they're so informative and such an easy read.
Yeah.
That it really enhances the listening.
Well, I mean, it's an all-around fantastic album. It's really great work by Dot Time. As you say, the liner notes by Michael Cascuna are really, really informative, extremely well-written. It's a really lovely album. We need to wrap it up there, Jerry, but it's been a real pleasure talking to you, as always.
Thanks, Luke. I really appreciate the support from you guys, as always, and thanks for really knowing what you're talking about when I talk to you.
Cheers, Jerry. Once again, that was Jerry Roach, so the director of Dot Time Legends. He's in charge of restoring, remastering, and releasing these previously unheard recordings by these legends. And the latest one is Ben Webster. You can purchase it on the Dot Time website. My name is Luke Seabright, and that was our jazz interview program. Thank you very much.
Hey!
C'était Jazz Interview avec Luc Seabright. Retrouvez tous nos podcasts sur notre site internet artdistrict-radio.com. Très belle journée, à notre écoute.